Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Chris Buckner, CEO and co-founder of Mainline, an esports tournament software development startup in Houston. Chris and I are going to discuss the growth and exposure that esports is having during this pandemic, plus the opportunities as well as the challenges he's faced during this time. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me. We're finally getting back to normal. And even if I'm able to hop on a call, it's like, oh, I get to actually talk to somebody. This is nice.
I know. These have been like the highlight of my week usually. So I'm really appreciative of you coming on. And I think we've talked about this, you know, esports seems to be one of the technologies that's having kind of a moment in this pandemic. And so I'm really excited to talk to you about it. I turned on the TV the other day and ESPN was playing some people playing a video game. And I thought that was just so cool. And of course, you know, this wouldn't have happened without, you know, baseball season being pretty much canceled. So I want to talk to you about Mainline and what you do. You know, it's an esports tournament software based here in Houston. So just tell me about how this has been for you and for Mainline.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those deals where it's a little bit bittersweet where, of course, you know, during this crazy time, there's so many weird things that are going on. And weirdly, our June will be pretty much the best month in our company. And a lot of that obviously is driven by the fact that everybody's looking for like a digital solution rather than an in-person solution. And, you know, a lot of our biggest partners, they happen to be in the collegiate space. And in the collegiate space, as everybody knows, you know, there was no baseball season. The basketball season was cut short. Nobody knows yet what's going to happen with the football season in the fall, whether it's going to be delayed or some games might get pushed. So I think what's happening is a lot of people, whether we're talking about colleges that are looking for just something to keep connecting students, new inventory potentially to kind of combat with the loss of traditional sports. And then, you know, this is kind of a little bit not off topic, but we have a small piece of our company that does production and broadcast, specifically remote production and broadcast. And we've probably done 10 different remote broadcast events over the last couple of months, last couple of weeks even, and ESPN has picked up a few of them. And it's just because everybody is looking for how can we still get sports or esports in front of people because everybody's just missing it so much. So we've been very, very fortunate to work in the industry that we do that's requiring, first of all, a completely all online solution. And then when it comes to the broadcast or production, it's all remote broadcast and production. So, you know, our business is doing great. We're starting to pick up pro sports teams on top of our college schools that we're onboarding. So been a wild time, but good.
And I think maybe for listeners, can you describe a little bit about, you know, esports and specifically what Mainline's technology enables?
Yeah, sure. So esports, there's two different worlds to it. There's gaming and then there's esports. Casual gaming is, you know, maybe you playing not against really anybody and just playing on your phone or playing on your Xbox or PlayStation. That's gaming. Esports is the highly competitive format of gaming where there's a prize pool. There might be entry fees. It's being somewhat produced. You know, there's bracketing and tiering of seeding of these individuals who are playing these games. And many people know these games. Some people don't, but you've got like your League of Legends, your Rocket League, your Overwatch, your NBA 2K, Madden. These are all the games that these students and other people are playing right now. And what our platform does is we license our technology to these schools so that the schools can run their first ever like fully sanctioned esports tournaments. So we happen to operate in what I call the intra-collegiate space. I know I'm not coining that as a new term, but there's a lot of intercollegiate gameplay that's going on in esports, and ours is intra, meaning just at that individual school. They open it up to the entire student body. It's more of a community-based tournament rather than a highly competitive, but there is some competitive aspects to it. So our platform, we white label it, which means we make it look and feel like it's their technology for each one of the schools that we have. And they can run their tournaments, whether it's a single elimination, Swiss, round robin, double elimination. They get control of how they want to run these tournaments and what game titles. And so it's just been really cool because right now the collegiate esports space is one of the hottest spaces in business when it comes to new opportunities. And we are right at this like turning point in our company of kind of being seen as the backbone, not from a league perspective, not from like an NCAA of esports. It's actually like taboo to say a little bit in the space, but we're more that software that's bringing continuity so that from school to school, everybody's using the same tournament software. So that's what we do. And then again, we have the broadcast and production, which is a totally different side of the business. But yeah, that's kind of what we do in a nutshell.
So how have you observed, I guess, the entire esports sector affected by COVID and kind of what have you seen and where is that going, do you think, following the pandemic as things start to reopen?
Well, so it's kind of, people ask me a lot, like with our school partnerships, right? Like we're ramping up really quickly and expected to be at 100 to 100 plus schools just by the fall. And what happened was we were already in talks with all of these schools and all of these media rights partners and all these publishers. And then when the coronavirus stuff hit and, you know, first of all, there was a loss of traditional sports, but second of all, there was just this need for more digital solutions, digital options, it sped up a lot of our partnership growth. And what we saw is, I mean, just like you talked about on ESPN, you can go flip on ESPN on like a Tuesday night. And sure enough, you're going to see esports right now, right? Because they're looking for live content and new content. Everybody is. Fox, ESPN, doesn't matter. But what we're seeing is more interest than ever in the esports space, right? Which is great. It was already growing fast. It was like we got to do a double hockey stick in the esports space. And we were growing super fast. And the big question is, just like you mentioned, so what's going to happen when everything starts going at least a little bit back to normal? You know, is it going to be, you know, a down curve essentially in esports? And the answer is like, no way. I think what you'll see is, sure, we had a spike, but it's going to be still much higher than it would have ever been beforehand. And it's going to be kind of like, it's just going to keep carrying on. I mean, sure, things are starting to go back to normal, but my meetings haven't slowed down at all with universities. In fact, we're expanding with universities to the point where they're running, we thought we were going to be running two different game titles on a semesterly basis. I've got universities that are asking, can we do 10 different game titles? So I don't, it might slow down a little bit in terms of how fast it was growing over the last 2 months, but I think it's set up nicely for a long term. You know, we're making people way more aware of the esports space, whether that's youth, high school, collegiate, or pro. Everybody is starting to see way more of it, and I think that's only a good thing for our industry. So selfishly, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like esports is something that kind of has a learning curve with people where they don't actually understand the business behind it and the opportunity there. So I was going to say, it seems like maybe COVID has, you know, opened the door for that capacity of just showing people what it really is.
Yeah. And what, so like the space, there's a couple different areas. So you've got what's called like your team play. So investors will invest in teams, like a, just like a franchise model in traditional sports. You've got Overwatch and League of Legends, which have actual franchise teams. You've got, you know, these tournament organizers, you've got leagues out there, and then you've got kind of some of the newcomers to the space, which is somebody, I mean, they've been around, but the tournament software solutions that are starting to come out. It's exciting for the esports world because, you know, this is a SaaS model rather than a sales and advertising, or sponsorship and advertising led revenue strategy, right? Ours is more licensed, software. And, I bring that up because everybody's starting to get a glimpse at all these opportunities in the space, but it's funny you bring up, you know, it's a learning curve because even when I first started watching Overwatch, for instance, cause I'm actually not a traditional gamer in the sense that like I never played competitively. I never, entered into any tournaments. I was more of the gamer that played NCAA football religiously. But you watch these game titles that come out and you kind of go, when you're first watching, you're like, I'm not sure if I understand, right? And that's been kind of an issue to the, when you're creating content in the space, you have to remember people are going to have to learn what this sport is. It would be like if you turn on baseball for the very, very, very first time, you've never seen it. And you're just like, okay, they're hitting this ball. You still have to do some explaining, right? You have to make it easy for the audience to understand and make it compelling. So I think this has been a good time because, you know, as the numbers for Twitch, which is the OTT over-the-top content provider in this, I mean, they're one of the biggest, Twitch, Mixer, YouTube gaming, Facebook gaming. When they create this content and now they're seeing record levels of people watching this content on their sites, it's important to try to like, I don't know how to say it, dumb it down maybe a little bit in terms of the content so that you know you've got a brand new audience that's going to be tuning in. You've got to capture them really quickly. You've got to explain the game really quickly. So your shoutcasters are having to do that kind of on the fly. But I think everybody's done a really great job, and it's awesome to see the esports like fandom growing, even though, you know, people are learning it on the fly.
It's like that accessibility so that more people are exposed to it. So how do you kind of hook them in?
Yeah, you got to hook them. And, you know, if you're looking at like a Madden or a NBA 2K, MLB, The Show, more of those traditional sports games, those tend to be like popular when it comes to people who are getting into the space wanting to create new content, because they know the audience member is going to be able to like, oh, I get it. I know that sport, right? But those games, when you talk about a League of Legends or an Overwatch, the amount of users that are playing those games compared to like an MLB The Show, which is a little bit more traditional sports game, the numbers are just staggeringly different. I mean, if you're talking about like Apex or Valorant or PUBG, you know, tens of millions of people playing at any given second, it's mind-boggling. So you still got to – those games are super, super popular. But you're trying to capture a new audience all the time. So I think it's a little bit difficult when ESPN, you know, they want to try to get people, and they probably want to lean into their Maddens and their FIFAs. But they've been awesome about picking up new game titles to showcase those. And I think people understand. I don't know. I'm hopeful that it just keeps growing, because more viewers, the better it is for college esports and pro esports.
So I wonder, kind of witnessing this growth in the industry and for Mainline as well, how have you kind of had to, you know, adjust your plans for your company and kind of your long-term goals?
Yeah. So, I mean, we had to do some layoffs early on because we had some people that were all on-site people only, really. You know what I mean? And once all of that went away, where you weren't having what's called LAN events, local area network events, and you weren't doing anything live at a location, it was all online, we had to make a couple changes there. And we pushed everything to, okay, everybody's going to work from home in this company for the foreseeable future. So you've got your developers who are developing the product, and then you've got your production team that's doing all of it remotely from their, like, you know, bedrooms. It's kind of funny. We've seen more business on that remote production side, and it was out of necessity, right? You've got to find solutions. And we were moving people around to try to keep as many people as possible in the company. And it just so turned out that we started kicking major butt on the production side. And now it's like, God, we got to hire some more people probably. And then you look at our product side, we've got to hire more people for the customer support and service that are going to be associated with 100 schools coming on board. So we're changing only like in the sense that we're speeding up our what we thought was going to be next year in regards to the amount of customer support that we were going to need and third party, you know, contracted tournament administrators for these things. Now we're having to go, gosh, we got to start figuring this out within the next month rather than 6 months from now, because it's just going that quickly. And it's a fantastic problem to have. You know, if you want some behind the curtain stuff, esports is kicking major butt. Our company, like I said, is going to have its best month ever. But the investors are not out there at the level they were pre-COVID, right? You've got we live in a VC world rather than a private equity world. Private equity has a lot of, you know, dry powder, but we are more risky company, so we have to rely on the VCs. And VCs right now are just a little bit gun shy of, okay, when are we going to get back in? Now, I will say this: we are definitely seeing they're moving their way back in into normal levels like we saw pre-COVID. But that's been my headache is, you know, we're in the middle of getting ready to raise our next round for the company because of the amount of growth and just navigating the waters of like, all right, when do we talk to this group? Are they going to, you know, do they have any capital that's available from one of their funds? So we've pivoted to entirely digital, and from a fundraising perspective, you know, we're looking at high net worth, family offices, and then a few strategics through institutional money. That's how we've pivoted as a company.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about kind of your runway and your plans for fundraising. You closed your Series A in November, so you are actively kind of moving forward that.
Yeah.
Series B, maybe?
Yeah, well, so here's that. Our first round, we actually started, we secured the first chunk of that all the way back in 2018, and it was a tranche-based fundraising round. So we actually started getting that money in all the way back in August of last year, or August of 2018. And so now we're coming up on 2 years already. And what we'll probably do is we'll probably raise a significant next round. We're guessing somewhere between 7 and 10 million sometime late in the fall with a close date of around March or April. So right about the 2.5 year mark from when we closed the first tranche of our Series A. Mm-hmm. So we're just now starting. We've probably talked to 40 VCs already, about 20 of which are interested in our price round, which is the one that's coming up. So we're like arming ourselves, but we're strategically on purpose. We're waiting before we ever take on any new money that's at all equity based, is we're waiting for these schools that are coming on in the fall, because the value of our company today versus the value on August or September, when we have 120 schools paying a semesterly license fee, it's a true recurring revenue model. We want to wait till then before we actually go to the market to secure funding. So we're a little bit ways off, you know, probably is 8 months before we close another funding round. But we're starting like the process just to make sure, you know, we have our plan in place. We're talking to all the right partners, because this will be our first round with institutional money. And that's a big deal, finding the right partner. I don't think we're going to have any problems raising. I think it's now going to be more of who's going to be the right one for us.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think from what I've heard from, VCs, is everyone seems to be, if there are investments, they're investments that they already had established relationships with startups. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what you've kind of witnessed, not, you know, speaking with all of these VCs, like, where are they at in investing?
That's such a great question, because that's the hoops that you're jumping through right now. For instance, you know, if we needed to go tomorrow and raise, you know, even if it was something like a bridge or something, if we had to, we know for a fact that it would be our current investors that would likely be putting up the bridge round, right? Just because that's the world that we live in. I will say, in these conversations with these VCs, it wasn't at all a question of, it was just a question of when they were going to get back into the market. So I know some of them are talking like they're definitely getting back into it now. You probably know there's a couple here in town that made announcements when that first week of March hit. There was a couple around town that said like, hey, we're going to put a little bit of a hold on this thing for 3 months. We're going to wait and see what happens, which is probably the smart move. Obviously, selfishly, I didn't want them doing that, because I want, you know, more new money getting pumped into the tech space in Houston all the time. But they're probably right to do that. But I would definitely say it's getting back to normal. Most of the VCs we were talking to, if we're talking end of the year, they could deploy by that time period. So I haven't had anybody that said like, no, we're shut down. I think though that they're doing more, not due diligence. All of them do a crazy amount of due diligence. I think they're just kind of like taking their time a little bit right now. That's all they're doing.
My favorite kind of comparison is that, you know, comparing investing to a marriage, and you wouldn't get married never having met that person in real life, just over Zoom or something. So it seems like that kind of new relationship turning into an investment is what's kind of the most challenged, and especially since they are focusing on, and that's a great point that you made, on their kind of current portfolio and making sure there's enough runway for those companies.
Yeah, and I wish I could say their names. I don't know if they would want me to, but we've probably talked to five that we have really good relationships with, and they all were at the beginning saying like, yeah, we're really, you know, right now at this moment, we're concentrating on our current companies, making sure that they're okay, but we're still obviously talking to people like you because we want to be prepared. We don't want to be behind if everybody does it. So I think that that's really smart. It's the same thing that my investors are doing, right? Like, even though they're family office and high net worth, they may not be a traditional VC, but they're taking care of us if we need it. Like, if we were in super big trouble, I guarantee you our investors would take care of us in this time. And they're going to take care of their own, like what they have in front of them. Like you said, their wives, their husbands right now, rather than a new Tinder date.
That's a great comparison. I just love it so much. So we've talked about a couple already, but for you, what would you say has been the biggest challenge operating in a COVID world as a startup?
Yeah, thank God we're not in trouble where we would have to raise right now. I think those companies they're just trying to do anything they can, cutting their staff, you know, cutting their payroll, doing anything they can to stretch it out. They all just have to do it, right? So like that's a tough one right now that we've at least recognized. I know super selfishly when it comes to me, I love being in the office and I love being around the employees I don't know if they feel the same way, but I love being around and being able to talk to these people. So being at home and every meeting is, it's kind of weird, right? You wake up, and I know everybody is doing this right now, but it is the same thing every day. So you're waking up, you know, let's say like my alarm clock goes off usually like 6:30 in the morning. Get up, make myself a cup of coffee, sit down where I am right now, which is in my kitchen. I was working from my couch and I found myself getting super distracted. So I moved over to like my kitchen table area, but every day sit down and just start my meetings and they're all, you know, online. So it's been a struggle for me personally, just because I'm so used to, I like in-person meetings. I like actually going and traveling and meeting with our partners, whether they're in a different state. I've always been that way. So that's been tough. The other obvious one is think about, so we've got a COO, a chief operations officer, chief product officer, senior director of partnerships, chief financial officer. All these people are having to manage their teams remotely. Now, we've been super fortunate that we have unbelievable managers at the company, and the employees have been fantastic to the point that we've even thrown around the idea of, hey, would you be cool working remotely pretty much forever? You know what I mean? You guys are kicking butt, and the managers are doing a good job managing the guys, the developers, for instance, or the design team. They're working harder than ever right now, and so it's tough probably for them to do a management the management styles that we were used to in the past. It's a lot different. It's all online. I think that was tough. We have these manager meetings every Tuesday and Thursday morning. It's like a stand up with all the C-suite guys and gals, and we. You know, we used to do those in person. They were some of the funnest times of the week because you want to make those meetings fun. And now it's like, all right, let's all get on the Zoom call and talk to each other. And I don't know. I feel kind of dorky saying that that's been a struggle for me, but it certainly has, that management from afar. But we've been very lucky. A lot of the people are just doing a good job, so we don't even have to worry about it. So fundraising and then off-site management. I'll say those have been two of the hard ones.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because that's so much of a selling point for working at a startup is to have that very collaborative, very high energy environment, I feel. I don't know if it's possible to provide that virtually. It's like, we're going to have yet another virtual happy hour. Everyone, you know, log off your own beer and let's talk and have some fun. But it's like, it's never, I don't think it could ever like really replace that.
Basically. No, it can't. And it's funny, you know, I'll liken it. So my group of friends, every Friday night, we do a hangout, right? Wow. And after I think it was 12 of them, 12 Fridays in a row. We even were like, let's take a break this week. Like, let's just take a break this week. And it kind of goes back to that in the group. We were doing happy hours. We were doing, you know, company meetings. And I think people were just like, yeah, we get it. Like, you're trying to make it fit. It's been tough. I will say, like, I love giving them a shout out where I can, but I've got guys and gals that are working. It's so funny. I have a problem where I'm constantly like working, even if it's like Saturday morning. I'll get on a Saturday morning and I'll see that 10 of my employees are working. And then I'll get on at 10:30 at night on Saturday or Sunday. And I'll see like 6 of my employees are working. And I'm like, golly, maybe we should just work remotely all the time, because they don't seem to have any problem with just throwing hours out the window, which I know that's horrible to say it that way, but they've been so great. You know, we moved to, we are a company that provides unlimited vacations. And before all this, we do flex scheduling and work remotely. But, you know, nobody has once taken advantage of it. And so it makes it, makes it super easy. And now that we're all working remotely, it's just now, can we stay sane during this time?
I think that's a good indicator of, you know, an engaged staff, though, to really like want to work even and be cognizant of how much you're working and when you're working, rather than just being like, it's 5 p.m. I'm logging off. Goodbye.
They don't believe in it. And, you know, I'm going to call one guy out. By the way, I would say 95% of my company is working like around the clock, you know, at ran times. And the only reason the other 5% isn't is because we have to give them a break at some point. But like, I got this guy, David Stagg, he's our chief product officer. He has gotten this new, like, he's always been super good in the company. He's amazing. But he just recently, like, I don't know, he turned it up a notch where I have to tell him, it'll be like Sunday night, 11 o'clock. And I have to tell him, like, get off your computer, like, stop. But I don't know. We're all feeling pretty fortunate where we are as a company right now. So I think people see this as like, man, I'm glad to have a job. I'm glad that I like the people that I work with. So a lot of that got to get compounded during this time, which is, man, I know I feel this way. I mean, I don't know if my employees do exactly, but I have to pinch myself. I'm like, God, I know a lot of other startups that are really struggling right now, and we just happen to be in a very lucky position. You know, God only knows, something else could have happened that digital isn't needed anymore. We're moving all to on-site. I don't know. So I don't know. I just have to pinch myself to you know, be so thankful that we happened to work in something that didn't get, you know, too beat up during this time.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about, which is kind of looking at Houston in general and Houston's sports tech, I guess, environment, which I feel like over, you know, I guess the past a little over a year and a half with Innovation Map, been covering kind of the growth. So I want to talk to you about kind of how you've seen the evolution within Houston and the kind of burgeoning sports tech environment in Houston. And I mean, obviously this increasing esports specifically like presence, but kind of the greater sports tech that you've seen grow in Houston.
Well, it's so cool. I'm going to call out one company in particular. They're good people, but even during this time, we just connected the guys over at Seats. So Aaron and them, and they're just kicking major butt. And hopefully I'm not sharing anything that they don't want me to share. But, you know, their partnerships just keep amassing. And, like, they're just doing such a good job. And he is such a hustler. And it's awesome to see that. And they're partnering with local sports teams, which is always great, right? And now they're starting to expand across, well, really the entire United States in different you know, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, but that's fun. And then, you know, I have my ties to like organizations like Viper, what was formerly Game Day Films. And it's cool to see this and what Match Challenge is doing from a sports and esports side. I don't know. I'm excited. I think I'm excited for when things get back to normal, because one thing that I know I have done a bad job of was in the past when I started FanReact, my first company. And even when I first started Mainline underneath FanReact, I was much more engaged with the other companies that were in the space, right? Because you're trying to network, you're trying to like do everything you can, right, to just keep going. And then once we raised our funds, my focus turned to, and this is not an exaggeration, our biggest client. I spent almost all of my time either on that client or on investor relations, right? And I completely, I guess you could say, neglected the local sports tech scene, not because I thought, oh, okay, well, we're past that now. It was more like, I don't have a choice. I got to get this done. So I'm looking forward to when everything gets back up, getting back involved even more with that, because almost every single reason why we're here where we are today was because of networking, in specifically in the Houston market. I mean, you go all the way about a quick shout out, obviously, but David Gao, oddly enough, David Gao is the reason I'm here with these companies today. Was he took a meeting with me back in 2012, 2013. So that was, you know, a couple of years before I started my first company. Didn't have to take a meeting with me. That guy's like the, first of all, coolest guy in the world. And he's also probably one of the most busy, and he did. And it was because of that networking, you know, here in Houston, good people. I always say that Houston has the best people. I don't know. I'm just excited to get back into that swing of things, because it was so beneficial. And if I can give back in any way, shape, or form, the way that he did, or Mark Toon from Work America Capital, or Fred Lummis, or the Zlotniks, all these people who are local area people, I feel like I've kind of neglected it just because of busyness with the company. But I'm excited to get back. But there are some definite wins out there. I mean, Seats is kicking major butt, so I'm excited. And he started. I remember when they first got started, because we were trying to petition to maybe even do some of their coding for them. When he got started, to see where he was and where he is now, it's so, I don't know, it's just really cool to witness that in the Houston area. So hopefully we can all keep kicking some more butt there.
And David Gao being the CEO of Gao Media, which owns Innovation Map, he will appreciate this. I'll have to tell him that he got a shout out. And yeah, Seats is great too. Also a friend of the podcast, Aaron from Seats. I feel like they've got such cool ideas for sports tech, just kind of waiting on their moment. And I hope everything does get back to normal so they can really grow. So very cool technology. I love covering it. Even if I'm not necessarily like the prime esports target market, I appreciate kind of the growth in Houston and really having the opportunity to make a good environment for it.
Yep. Agreed completely.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me about all of this. It's, like I said, exciting to see esports kind of having its moment, and your connection and Houston presence. It's really great. So thank you again.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. And tell, if you see David, tell him hi. I'm actually getting ready to leave to go grab a drink with Lawson here in a little bit. A social distancing drink. So I'll say hi to him too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
You got it. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Be sure to rate and review the show and join me next week for another interview with a Houston innovator.